Hey there, everyone. Thanks for listening to Limited Engagement. I'm your host for the show, Jared Duran. My guest on this episode is SJ. She's a tattoo artist. You can find her by looking for Tattoos by SJ. I'll get to more of that in just a sec. It's, I don't know, it's crazy out there. Go for my runs in the morning, and there's like nobody. It's like being in 28 days later or something. It's pretty wild. Spending a lot of time with the cat. Spending a lot of time, well, you know, let's get the business stuff out of the way real quick. You can subscribe to the show if you're not already on your favorite podcast app. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, if you would be so kind as to rate and review the show, that would be hugely helpful. If you want to follow on social media, it is LTD_engagement on Twitter, LTD engagement everywhere else. And what else? Oh yeah, if you want to support this show and other Hoot and Waddle things, we are doing some sales right now. I'm not going to go into all of them, but if you follow Hoot and Waddle, that's HOOTN Waddle, like waddling. I'm going to post about them there, or you could sign up for that newsletter, or you could go to patreon.com/hootandwaddle and see how to become a sustaining patron. I know everybody's asking for money right now, but it is all to help keep people afloat while you can't actually go visit them. I participated in that the other day, actually. I wrote an article on how event cancellations and postponements were affecting local record stores, specifically Record Store Day being pushed back to June. And by the time that article actually posted, which is, it's on the Phoenix New Times, if you just search for my name and Phoenix New Times, or in the Phoenix New Times website, the article will come up. At least two out of the three stores whose owners I interviewed for the piece had closed the storefront, which, you know, responsibly so. I think that is the right thing to do, but they still have to make money, and other local businesses still need to make money, and a lot of them have moved to, you know, either curbside pickup or delivery, or requested that you go to their websites. So if you do have it to spare, small businesses such as mine and others around could use the support. I took Stinkweeds up on their curbside pickup thing. I saw that they had a copy of My Aim Is True, Elvis Costello's debut album, which I have on in several different versions on CD, but I had not had the actual LP, and so that they had it, and it was a decent price, and it's a good copy. The Columbia Records version, not the Stiff Records version, but, you know. So it was really easy. Just DM'd them, said I wanted to buy it, paid over the phone, and they handed it to me through a slot after wiping it down with a Clorox wipe, and it was all very easy. So please, if you can, support those businesses that you normally would anyway by seeing what sort of alternative methods they have available for you to do that. In addition to that, just, you know, How is everybody keeping sane? Keeping in touch with one another? You know, don't get succumb to cabin fever or whatever just by because you've forgotten to reach out and communicate. I'm listening to a lot more podcasts. I started listening to one called The Star Wars Minute, which there are a lot of minutes of Star Wars. They just they watch 1 minute of the film and discuss it. And it's been entertaining. I've finished Legion. It's fantastic. If you like just wild avant-garde mindfuck shows that also happen to involve mutants, then I highly suggest Legion. They really stuck the landing with it, as far as I'm concerned. I thought it was great. I've just started rewatching Buffy, and that's fun to go back through. And what else? It's a great time to really dig into those things that you might maybe have gotten away from. For instance, sitting with an album and really diving into the lyrics. Listen to something with headphones. I would definitely advise against too much screen time. Go for a walk. As I mentioned, I go on runs. I try to go for a hike here in a minute. I'm assuming trails are still open. Read, do that sort of thing. I don't know. It's a weird time. I did my first, it's technically my second, I guess, interview over Skype. It's not my preferred method for talking to somebody. The whole having the camera on bothers me. So even though it's still just not the same as being face to face with somebody, even with the camera. So and then one of the downsides to audio only is missing those facial cues during conversation that can kind of help guide that conversation. It actually went really well, so you can expect to hear that and more of those in the coming weeks. And this is the last of the in-person interviews you'll probably hear for a while, because it is it is important. All of the experts say this is what we need to do. So responsible social distancing. So, it's what we're going to do. And I'm hoping that actually, some of the things we're seeing as a result of this new paradigm actually take hold after this is all over. It would be, it's responsible, I think, for the planet to do more of this remote working kind of thing. If you don't have to commute, why pollute the air more than it has to be done? Some of these things that we're doing to adapt to this environment, and by environment now I'm switching to like personal social environment, it's some of it's actually probably pretty healthy. Maybe a little less toxic personally. Really makes you think about who you're spending time with and if my circumstance is different. I'm sure that people who are home with their spouse or significant other and children are having a much different experience than I am by myself with a cat. I'm enjoying this time, to be honest. It's kind of forced reflection and really taking stock of things. And there's plenty of stuff to do. I am in the process of moving to a different apartment, so that that occupies some time as well. I don't know. If you'd like to kind of share how you're coping with things, you can find me through those various social media channels I mentioned, or you could email ltd.engagement@gmail.com. And if you would like to set up an interview over Skype, you know, if you're a writer, a musician, artist, entrepreneur whose work is involved in the arts, and you have a way that you would like, you know, to get your, if you'd like to get word of how people can support your work alternatively at this time, email me and we'll set up a time to work that out. So I am fascinated by tattoo art. I've had, SJ is not actually my first tattoo artist on the show, and we kind of had gotten to, you know, in touch via Instagram due to the first tattoo artist I had on the show, which is Levi Smith. You can find him on Instagram at Levi Smith Art, and you can hear that interview with Levi and Kenny Puckett, who together do a really fun comic called Mop and Bucket. It's I don't remember how many episodes back that was, but it's a bit back there. Anyway, so that's how we got in touch, and I really love SJ's artwork. I think she's a fantastic artist, and I am slowly moving towards myself getting a tattoo. It's a long journey. It's permanent, you know, and we talk about that a bit, about how it is important to really consider what it is you want. And yeah, I had a blast talking to her. And this was, as you will be able to tell from the conversation, it was right before all of this hit, and everybody was sequestered, and the panic buying was just beginning. And but yeah, like I said, it was great talking to SJ. Enjoy that conversation, and talk to you briefly on the other side. Well, thanks for making the time to do this. It's and for actually coming over and everything in these recent times. It's hard to, you know, nobody wants to go out of the house.
Oh, I know. Yeah, of course. It was my pleasure. Thanks for reaching out and having me do this. I was really excited.
Well, I've been following you on Instagram for a while, and I love your artwork. So
thank you.
We can get to this later, but I think I've finally decided what I want for a tattoo. So,
nice.
So we can talk about that. But
that would be great. Yeah, that's the hardest part about tattoos, I think, is making that decision when you're getting your first one, and after that, it's like Pringles. Like you just can't stop.
That's pretty funny.
Yes.
But yeah, well, that was the thing. It takes too long to decide about anything. It's you know, if I'm in a restaurant, it takes forever to order.
I'm the opposite. I'm a little too impulsive, I think.
That's you know, it's as I've gotten older, I have less time for it. So I think that I've just found a few things that I know I like, and I just stick to that.
Yeah.
It just makes it easier. But so I'm curious, did you grow up here?
Yes, I am actually born and raised in Arizona.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not common. I've been here since I was 10, so over 25 years. But
cool.
So it feels kind of native-ish, but it's not a lot of people seem to have moved here when they were kids or moved here after college or what part of Arizona did you grow up in? Is it also Phoenix or?
Well, I was born in Mesa and then I believe moved to Phoenix when I was two. And then from there, grew up in Phoenix and then bounced to Flagstaff, kind of bounced back down to Phoenix, bounced to Flagstaff. Did that for a few years and then attempted to move away to Texas for about 6 months and then ran right back to Phoenix. And then just recently moved out to Scottsdale. So those are pretty much the main areas that I've lived in so far and probably not going to go anywhere.
What was the lure of Texas, just out of curiosity?
Well, my sister actually lived out there and she was like, well, if you want to change your pace, because I was kind of feeling burnt out. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd already gone to several different schools ranging anywhere from motorcycle mechanics to aesthetics to maybe I want to be a nurse. Like, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. So she was like, come out to Texas, take that breath of fresh air and just escape. And then after 6 months, she had an opportunity to leave Texas and I didn't want to go where she was moving. Mm. So I moved right back to Phoenix. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
What part of Texas?
Lubbock.
Lubbock. What's where? Because Texas, having... I was just in San Antonio last week, and I drove.
Wow.
And I did not stop anywhere, except for gas and whatnot. And that's a long drive.
Yes.
And there is a lot of Texas. I would argue that there is too much Texas.
Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of nothing
right.
that you're There's looking at, too.
Huge stretches of just of absolute nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And for as far as you can't see either, because so much of it is flat and there's like nothing.
Yeah.
And so where in relation to some of the other kind of major cities and whatnot is Lubbock, rather?
So the easiest way I can explain it is that square part of Texas. It's kind of like up in the corner, like right on the edge.
Is that the handle or whatever?
I think like the panhandle, I think is what they called it. And I'm trying to remember what the closest city... But I don't remember. I know it was really close to Texas Tech because that was like a huge thing out there was like the football, Texas Tech, and then Longhorns, I think. I don't watch sports still, but
I'm not a sports guy at all.
It was a struggle.
I would imagine, especially in Texas.
Where
I think the major exports or pastimes are cows and meat sports, football.
Yes, and so. I admire a lot of people out there tried to teach me, and I was like, oh, your efforts are so appreciated, but I just don't get it. I'm not going to get it. Thanks for trying.
Well, so you were saying that you kind of had, it sounded like you were kind of having a little bit of a difficulty finding your vocational path.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of your main passions, though, as you were growing up, and what did you really take to that you saw yourself doing?
Yeah, well, actually, I've always drawn little stick figures or little comics for my friends. Started getting into more like anime style stuff where I would just pick out my favorite anime and trace over it and then just like pass those out to people, and you know, anything that reminded me of them, I would just draw it for them. And then I got into music, so I started doing drumline in school, and I thought I was really going to take that path, but then just kind of fizzled out. Like, it, you know, you try something, you're all about it, and then you're like, oh, I just don't think I can make this work as like a full-time career because I guess I wasn't as passionate about it as I wanted to be. And then got into theater and then really enjoyed that, and then that kind of fizzled out. But then the only thing that never really fizzled out that always kind of stuck was either drawing or painting. So I was like, okay, I really want to do something with this. But then you're hit with the... that's not a real job. You'll never make money from that. You know, there's so many artists out there. Why don't you do something unique or, you know, that's already been done? And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to try to get a real job. So then I got into pharmacy. I've been a pharmacy technician for 12 years now. And it's been a great career, but it was very, like, opposite of art and creativity. It was just more like science and numbers and data. And, you know, it's been a great career, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. So then I, you know, tried to branch out and do other things and just always kind of ended up back in my room at the end of the night drawing away or just listening to music and trying to do something creative to balance out how much science I had to deal with that day. And
You know, I think that it comes from a good place that people are concerned for our well-being and how we're going to make a living. But at the same time, it's beating all of the enjoyment out of, you know, or because it's, I don't know. I like I said, I think it's a concern thing. But at the same time, I don't think that people, adults, realize what they're doing to kind of squash the spirit and creative side, which is, you know, obviously, I don't know that it's necessarily easier. You know, I still certainly myself struggle to make a living out of any creative endeavor. And I have to have a day job to pay the bills. But really, it's if you have whatever you have a passion for is what you're going to be good at. Because you want to devote the time to it. It's like that the 10,000 hours thing, right? The Malcolm Gladwell thing, right?
Yeah, you're going to put in the effort.
Yeah, and it's the effort that, you know, it's on the one hand insane to me, but also it's just so American too, right? To have, to hold no value in arts. You know, just looking at the numbers purely, how little for you know, a major world power we spend on arts and arts education and so forth is this, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have clients that will come in and have the latest, you know, iPhones or newest technology, or, you know, they're dropping hundreds of dollars on this designer clothing, but then they don't want to put any money invested into their art and they want to haggle with you. You're like, this is permanent. Like, this is art. And it's tough finding that, like, because, you know, that balance of, like, what you want to spend your money on. I understand it, but it's almost like art is just so underappreciated these days.
Right.
It's tough, you know? So...
Well, I think, yeah, it's finding people don't know how to see some sort of monetary value in something that they can't measure or don't understand, I think.
Yeah.
You know? But you know, there is. It's you know, from people who write, people who are artists, people who even, let's say, I don't know, make their own jewelry or something, and there's a combination of, I think, that those of us who are, who do identify as artists, have trouble really at some point. I think we are able to get there and see it, but to see the value in our own work and to be able to really charge people what it's worth, because how do you assign a monetary value to that? And then also to get other people to understand there's supplies involved, there's time involved, you know, it's how do you there's so much involved, and if it's not supported, then that just goes away because we still have to put food on the table, you know. You still have I'm sure, you know, you have we'll get to this in a little bit, but I know you work out of Levi's studio, right? So, but there, you know, there's space rental involved. There's equipment that you have to keep up on. There's, you know, the inks and so forth. It's still it's still a business, but somehow we can't convince people that it's something that that needs to be paid for.
Yeah, and it's tough, like, trying to explain it to them too, because, you know, you're kind of in a position where you feel like, I don't need to explain these things, but at the same time, you kind of want to, so that way maybe they do get that understanding. Because a lot of people coming into tattooing, it might be their first time. They've never even stepped foot into a studio, or they don't know what's involved. Like, what do you use? Is it just watercolor inks? That, you know, it's like, no, these are, you know, inks specifically designed to be placed into the skin. And, you know, there are a lot of supplies involved. In most shops, you know, traditionally, they don't supply the supplies. So you do have to pay rent, and then you also have to pay for your supplies. And there is good quality supplies, and then there are not so good quality supplies. And, you know, I try to stay in the top end area, which makes my setup a little bit more expensive. But, you know, quality is something that's always been kind of driven with pretty much anything I've ever done. You know, with my pharmaceutical background, I used to make IVs for hospitals, you know, for the hospital that I was working at. And that requires, like, a very sterile aseptic technique. And I transferred a lot of that knowledge into my tattoo setup. So there's a lot of cleaning chemicals. There's a lot of, you know, making sure that you're not touching things with like a dirty hand, or if you do, like you got to re-glove and, you know, just keep things really nice and sterile. And that's one thing that, you know, my setup is pretty pricey because I have like safety and quality is my absolute like top priority with every single one of my clients. And there, you know, there might be some other artists out there that don't take it, I guess, as serious as me, and they'll be fine. Your tattoos are going to be fine. You know, they're not going to get infected or anything because we don't need a tattoo out of a clean room, but it's just one of those extra steps that I like to take with my clients to ensure that they're going to walk away with a very clean and safe healing process. But it's expensive.
I don't know if it's me, if I'm making the choice, I'm going for the cleanest.
Mm-hmm.
And also this stuff, as you mentioned, this stuff is permanent. It's something that you're going to live with unless you pay to laser it off, which that's not happening for me.
That's even more expensive, so you better just pay for the good quality tattoo, you know?
Exactly.
You have to pay for lasers later.
Right. So let's go back a little bit to early art days. What did you initially... Who kind of influenced you as far as starting drawing and painting and all that sort of thing?
My sisters are all quite talented with their artistic abilities as well. And I would always see my sisters drawing and not so much painting, but they all drew. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to be like them. You know, they're the older siblings. I want to kind of follow in their footsteps a little bit. You see them drawing and, you know, doing really cool stuff. And you're like, man, I really want to do that too. So then you pick up your own papers and you try to do what they're doing and you're just like, this is not as easy as you guys made it look. So then you just want to like practice and practice more. And then I just kind of started seeing other artists, you know, whether it was friends in class, and trying to associate myself with them a little bit more subconsciously. I didn't even really realize that I was doing it, but just trying to be friends with that person that was always drawing. And then you just exchange your drawings, and then later on, like after high school and stuff, it, you know, once I got into pharmacy, it just kind of like dropped off the face of the planet. I didn't really draw as much as I wanted to, but then I got my first tattoo. And after that I was like, wow, like this is such a cool experience, like these artists are so talented, and I wanted to know as many of them as I could. So I started following them on social media and like trying to be friends with them. And then a couple years later, I got a tattoo, wasn't finished because the gentleman that was working on it had moved to a different state. So then I ended up meeting a friend of Levi's that finished my tattoo, and then I met Levi, and then we just started like our long friendship from there, and started following his artwork, started getting his tattoos, and then just kind of following everybody that he knew, like any artist that I like their style, I would just follow them all. And, you know, I didn't really, I guess, notice that I was doing it purposefully. Like, it was just like, this was an interest of mine, so I just would follow them, you know, and then wanted to either try some of those styles out, or, you know, it was so hard to find my own style, so I was following everybody, you know, like Loish was a big inspiration, even though she does a lot of like people. I don't really draw people a whole lot or tattoo people a whole lot. I'm more of like animal stuff, but yeah, I just kind of followed anybody I liked their style and just kind of went from there.
So that's a kind of leap to something that I think I've probably said a lot on this podcast is that in any kind of art discipline, you've got to, you know, your art to begin with is going to be, you know, look like the people that you love, you know, that you love their work, you know. It's the same thing for writing, it's the same thing for music, and then you just keep creating out of that until you find what your style is, and then at some point that's just your voice is there.
Yeah,
that's what that is. But everybody, you know, writers have their novel that reads exactly like somebody else's style until they find their own, or they have, you know, it's the same thing for everybody. So that's from do you mind if I ask what your first tattoo was?
The first tattoo I did on skin was actually, I did a little pineapple on my ankle.
Oh.
Yeah, so I had kind of reached out to Levi, and he'd been giving me some pointers on like what to do, because at this point I was actually in Texas and I didn't have any friends in Texas, so not really at first. So then I just started drawing again, and then kind of reached out to him, would you be interested in apprenticing me? And he's like, no. And then I was like, okay, that's cool. So then I just started doing my own thing, and then he saw like how persistent I was, so then mm-hmm. he was like, okay, here's some pointers, do this, this, and this. I did this, this, and this. And then one night I was like, hey, like, you know, I got this tattoo equipment and I really want to do a tattoo. And the fake skin that they provide to practice on is like ridiculous. What do you think about me doing this? And he's like, well, I guess if you think you're ready, like, go ahead. So I was like, what are my favorite things? And I was like, I love pineapples. So I did this little pineapple drawing, redrew it like several times. And then I was like, I think I'm ready to tattoo it. Did the tattoo. It was very painful trying to like figure out how to adjust the machines without somebody standing right over me, because our like apprenticeship kind of started out like I was in one state, he was in the other. Mm. You know, so I watched a lot of videos and then just adjusted everything, and I finished the tattoo, but it was rough.
It sounds, the way you tell it, it sounds like it was a painful experience.
Yes. And I know there's a lot of people that have so much like negative perspective on people tattooing and kind of like learning on their own. But I was a single mom and I was trying to work as many jobs as I could to make things work. And with traditional apprenticeships, they kind of make you jump through some impossible hoops. And I was not in a position where I could jump through those impossible mm-hmm. hoops, but I had a dream that I wanted to accomplish, and nothing was going to stop me. And even negative commentary or negative perspective from individuals who are hardcore, you know, rooting for that traditional apprenticeship, it wasn't going to be an option for me. So I was like, yeah, I did a home tattoo. Mm. I did it on myself, though, and I didn't want to attempt to do it on somebody else until I was more comfortable working with real skin, and right. My skin was available, so that's what I did. And the first few tattoos I did were on my skin. They were not that bad, you know. They healed well. They didn't, you know, get scar tissue at all. And then a few of my friends in Texas were like, "Hey, I'll be a guinea pig," and I was like, "Okay, but I don't really, you know, I have very minimal experience, but I have very clean experience because I did work in a clean room, so like I know how to keep you clean and safe. Mm-hmm. I know how to sterilize my equipment." But putting a tattoo into skin is so much harder than I had realized, you know? So I did the first few on myself, and then I was like, okay, I guess I'm comfortable enough to try and tattoo somebody else. So I did a couple other tattoos on some friends, and they didn't turn out that bad. So I was like, okay, I think I'm going to keep going, you know? And then I ended up actually back in Phoenix, closer to Levi, and he was able to give me more tips and pointers, and it just kind of grew from there. I just didn't stop, and I was like, wow, this is the one thing I found that I'm like, this is, nothing's gonna stop me, this is what I'm gonna keep doing, you know.
So I have two questions off of that. One's a quick one. What is the fake skin, because that sounds terrible?
Oh, it's like this really thin rubber band material that it's like, you know, you can get it in different sizes. You can even get it in different shapes, like the shape of a hand or the shape of an arm. And it's meant to either practice on, or if you have a piece that you really want to do but you can't find anybody who's willing to put it on their skin, mm-hmm. you can tattoo it on this fake skin and then you can just like hang it up. But the stuff that I was working with was just like a sheet of paper. You know, it was like half the size of a sheet of paper, but this rubber band material, you try to tattoo on top of it, and it's not like skin, because you have to stretch the skin to really get some solid lines and really put the ink in there correctly. And you can't really stretch this rubber band material. Like, it just kind of just almost breaks away when you go to try to put the ink in. And it would just, like, dull out your needles, your needle configuration so quickly that I was like, I just can't. So I think I did, like, one tiny little heart, and I was like, nope. This is not going to work. So then I moved on to a pineapple.
Then the other question I have is about the apprenticeship. So what, I mean, because there are very few things that have like true apprenticeships anymore. Mm-hmm. And what, for a tattoo artist, what exactly is involved in an apprenticeship?
Well, it just depends, I guess, on who's doing the apprenticeship. Because to my understanding, you know, most apprenticeships you sometimes even have to pay for. You know, it can cost a couple thousand dollars depending on who is willing to apprentice you. They want at least 40 hours of your time. But if you're already working like a 40-hour job, it can be really difficult to manipulate that kind of schedule, especially if you have kids involved or you're taking care of somebody else that can't take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really hard to designate that much time to something, you know, but it's worth it, you know, if it's something that you want to do. And I still advocate for like a traditional apprenticeship if you can, but I also think that there's more than one way to get the job done. It just depends on how resourceful you can be and just like, just still upholding those quality standards of, you know, keeping things safe, keeping things clean. Other sides to traditional apprenticeship is just drawing a lot. You know, they want you have to be able to draw if you're going to tattoo realistically, you know, and so they want you to draw a lot of designs and really just see if you're serious about that. Because if you're not going to sit down and draw, then you're not going to be able to sit down and tattoo.
Right.
You know, because some tattoos, I've tattooed 14 hours straight, you know, and it's a lot, you know, and I think once you've kind of shown yourself that you show up and that you keep doing these drawings and you have proven yourself in that way, like sometimes they'll, you know, throw you a client or something small, something that you're going to be able to accomplish and do it well, do it efficiently. And then the more projects you kind of take on from there, like the more you prove, the more you'll get. So if you prove that you can do this, like they'll maybe throw you something bigger, a little bit more challenging. But then there's that dark side to apprenticeships where I've heard horror stories where it's like, you know, they make them pick up, cigarette butts in like a parking lot, not even their own parking lot. It's like the store next door's parking lot and they have to pick up every single cigarette, or they have to, if you're a man, they'll make you wash like the entire car's parking lots, or the entire parking lot's cars in a bikini. Oh, like, they just kind of try to humiliate like you. Instead. Yeah. Right. And, like, wow. I'm so grateful and will always be grateful that I never actually had to do that. You know, I never had to do anything that was humiliating, because I probably would have done it. You know, I've been hazed before, like, with soccer and stuff growing up in high school. And those are just mortifying experiences. But if it's something that you want to do, then they're going to go through it. But I don't really see the benefit of it, you know, other than it being, like, maybe it'll make you stronger. Like,
that sounds like bullshit.
Yeah, but standing in a parking lot in a bikini, like, washing this car doesn't make me a better tattoo artist. Right. Like, that doesn't have to do with anything.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, there's some dark sides to apprenticeships, but if you come along the right person who's going to apprentice you, like, respectfully, then I think that there's absolutely some benefits to it. You know?
That all sounds incredibly wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, some people have some extremely positive experiences from their apprenticeships, and then others just don't. And then that's what encourages people to kind of go on their own route and do stuff from home. And they, you know, they're typically called scratchers, and it might not be the most, like, sterile or clean environment, but it's like, if they tried to get a traditional apprenticeship and then you ridiculed them, what else did you think that they were going to do? Like, stay there and get ridiculed? Probably not. Like, they really want to go for it. They're going to try to find other means, and tattooing out of your home is their other means.
So do people just get away with it because they're revered artists, or, you know, how does that kind of culture survive?
And I'm not really sure, because I know had I been through that kind of experience with somebody and they told me that's what I needed to do, like, I don't know, like, it's hard to say what I probably would have done, because I really wanted to be a tattoo artist. So a part of me thinks that I would have just, like, stopped them and maybe told them, no, I'm not going to do that, and then tried to go find a different artist that had a different approach. Mm-hmm. But then a part of me thinks I probably would have just done it, because that's what tattoo artists do, you know? So I don't know. I think part of it is, like, maybe it's an ego thing. Like, they think their artwork is so spectacular that they can just get away with it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's subjective, you know. I don't know.
So I interviewed a writer who has almost her entire body tattooed.
Cool.
And she had mentioned, when I talked to her about the choices that she makes as far as what she gets tattooed on her, it she discussed wanting to be tattooed by certain artists,
mm-hmm.
Whose work she admired, and then also going to them and asking them to not like handing them something that she wanted done, but asking for them to, you know, do what they do, you know, to,
oh, okay.
to basically use, it sounds like using her as a canvas really, mm-hmm. to, that going to the artists because you like their artwork, you want them to, create what they're going to create and not kind of dictate what they're going to create. Have you ever had an experience like that where you wanted to, I mean, that sounds a little risky to me, going to somebody and not having, just being like, here, yeah, do your thing. You have this much space. Do what you want.
I have actually been very fortunate enough to have a couple clients come up and they're just like, okay, I want my forearm done. I kind of want like this animal, but I love your style. So just draw something. I'm not going to limit you. Use your artistic ability and show me what you got.
Hmm.
I'm like, okay, well, then after the deposits are paid for and all of that, you know, I'll be like, well, in a couple of weeks, I'll show you what I've designed and we can kind of go from there. And, you know, most of the time they're like, I love it. Like, that's perfect. I'm like, okay, any changes? No. And you're like, great. Like, because they gave you, you know, that freedom to kind of do your own thing. And I think, like, it's really important to trust your artist with that, because on the opposite side, when you go, okay, I want this cat tattooed, but this has to be this color. I really want the collar around it to be this certain texture. And it has to say this in like the tiniest little impossible writing on the little emblem dangling down. I kind of want it to have like this background and I want these conflicting colors to be in there too. And like, they don't understand like how unrealistic that design actually is to tattoo, because they don't understand that not every design is tattooable. And there's certain things that you have to stick with. You know, there are kind of some rules that you have to stick with if you want your tattoo to last over time. You know, so then at that point, it becomes a real struggle trying to give this client what they want and then what will be amazing looking in 10 years. Because it's just, it doesn't work out that way. You know, so then with, you know, another beautiful side of tattooing is you have the ability to say no, you know. Like, I don't have to tattoo every design that comes my way. You know, if I feel that what they want is somewhat unrealistic or maybe they're not cooperating enough to work with me and what I know will hold up over time, I can absolutely say, you know, like, as much as I appreciate, like, working with you so far, I just don't quite think I'm the artist for you. Like, there's this person maybe I can send you off to, or, you know, you just need to kind of look at some more portfolios and get a better idea of what might realistically, you know, be more tattooable, you know, because some designs I just won't do, you know, because it's just not practical and it's not going to hold up. And then essentially they are walking business cards. So if I put that out into the world, yeah, it might look good for maybe like a month or two, but then over time, if it all starts to kind of blur together or those lines don't hold up because I caved in and I didn't do what I knew I should have done, and I let the client control like my station and my workflow, then, you know, I might get other people out there that want that, and then they're going to keep coming and I'm going to keep having that problem,
right?
You know, instead of just putting my foot down and saying, no, this isn't, I can't do this, you know, because I want my business card to walk out the door and I want it to look good.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
So how does, do you, now, because that leads me to a couple of other things. One is that, I mean, the body changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, things wrinkle, things, you know, fall, they, whatever.
Elasticity breaks down.
Yeah, it does. It's skin. And especially, you know, if we don't, you know, keep it up over time. And honestly, after a while, you just get tired and there's gravity and age. So now, and one of my, I always think about, that Simpsons episode with the hellfish where Grandpa has the tattoo on his arm and he's, you know, trying to show it to Bart, and he's like, you know what this is? And he's like, what, some wrinkly old tattoo? And he has to like stretch out his arm to show what it actually looks like.
That's too funny.
So are there body parts that you maybe discourage from somebody getting tattooed, knowing that it's not like the greatest place again over time?
Yeah, there are several. Like the armpit is a really tricky area, or the ditch, which is like the top side of the elbow, like where you bend your arm. We call that the ditch. And those kind of, because there's so much movement, it breaks down over time, like knuckles or hands. Like I just had the tops of my knuckles done like a few years ago by Levi. And a lot of it has already fallen out just because of how much you use your hands and how many times you wash your hands. And, you know, there's just
knuckles all the time
and, constant movement. It really just like falls out and breaks out. And, you know, we'll tell people like, I can do it, but it might not be readable in a few years. Mm-hmm. You know, and some clients are like, oh, yeah, I don't care. And then others are like, okay, well, maybe I'll do this part. Like, I'll work with what you recommend.
Gotcha.
You know, so there's definitely some guidance involved when people get their first tattoos or any tattoo, really, because it's not always their first one that they, you know, nobody really wants to go for the armpit for their first tattoo.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, there's definitely some guidelines that I try to follow, you know.
Are there, generally speaking, areas that are just known to be more sensitive as well, that are harder for the person receiving the tattoo to get to sit through?
Yeah, that can be very subjective as well. I have some clients where, like, you know, the ribs are easy for them. Mm. And then most of the time, the ribs are extremely hard for them, you know. So it really just depends. Like, I've heard that the top of the foot is absolutely the worst. But I got my top of the foot done, my left foot, and it didn't hurt at all.
Huh.
So I was like, I don't know. It really just depends. But I think generally, you know, tops of the foot are really, really rough. The ribs can be really rough and the neck can be really rough, especially I'm told for men, because I have my neck done and it really wasn't that bad either. But for men, you know, going over the Adam's apple is very sensitive, you know. So I guess it really just depends. But they have these pain charts. And I've even posted a pain chart on my Facebook page. And I get conflicting information. Like the comments start flooding in and people are like, wow, that area that said on the, you know, the chest wasn't even bad for me. Or like my first tattoo was on the ribs and I didn't think it hurt that bad. Why is that area red? And, you know.
Well, I guess it does. The people are different and people's pain thresholds are different and it's all nerve endings, right? So you have, if you've also had an experience where maybe, you know, those, that particular area was maybe desensitized in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's a whole nother side of getting a tattoo. It's not just like, you know, you go under the tattoo and it's going to feel the same every time. A lot of it has to do with, how are you feeling that day?
Oh, yeah.
Were you recently sick? Did you break a bone in that area? Maybe that's more sensitive. Like, like if people come in or my client comes in and they're just absolutely like stressed out from something that's going on inside of their life, like outside of the studio, you know, they come in and they're just, you could tell like they're visibly upset. You know, sometimes I'll just throw it out there. Like, do we need to reschedule or do you want to sit and talk for a few minutes? Because like, their stress does have a physiological response on their body. So if they go into a tattoo extremely stressed out, an area that might not have hurt them with their last tattoo might hurt like excruciatingly painful or might be excruciatingly painful at this time around because they're just not in the right mindset for it.
Hmm.
You know, and they might not realize it, you know, but it can be true. Like my one of my best friends, she had this huge back piece done. And she would sit for hours at a time. And then she recalled one session where she walked in, did her normal thing, but she just wasn't quite feeling it, was having a bad day. And she sat for maybe 15 minutes and was like, nope, gotta call it because I just can't do this today.
Huh.
You know, and it was in the same area that she had been getting tattooed like every 2 weeks or something prior to that. You know, so it can definitely... There's a lot of things that can impact the sensitivity of an area. It's not just like a physical, like this area hurts all the time, 100% of the time.
Mm.
There's a lot of things that could impact it.
That does make sense. As far as the upkeep of something goes, now, you know, things also, again, things just fade over time. Again, it's skin, your cells, you know, that it's dust, right? Skin, dust is skin. What is the best way to keep something up, and then also are touch-ups like a thing? You know, how often do you, I guess that can also be subjective depending on where it is, but mm-hmm. I mean, over time things are going to fade and the colors are kind of going to not be the same. Have you done much work with having an existing piece of art that you needed to kind of touch up and redo for somebody?
You know, I don't think I've actually done a ton of touch-ups now that I think about it. I did have one client that wanted to come in and, you know, requested a touch-up because it had faded, but mm-hmm. it was just that standard fade because a fresh mm-hmm. tattoo looks so bright and vibrant because right. it's sitting, you know, kind of on top of the skin, like that skin is broken. There's no healed skin over the top of it, so it does look really bright and beautiful, but then, like, when skin heals, you kind of get that like glass window effect where right. the design is now behind something and it's that fresh skin. And I just think it was kind of like I kind of dropped the ball as an artist explaining to her, like with her first tattoo, that it, like once it heals, it might not look as fresh because mm-hmm. of the skin healing over it. But I don't actually think she ever came in for that touch up, because I think once I sent her the email, it was just kind of like a light bulb moment. Okay. Now this, it doesn't need to be that fresh, because mm-hmm. The brightness of it, of a fresh tattoo, is not going to last forever.
Right.
You know, things will definitely heal beautifully and look bright if you, you know, really follow the instruction, like the aftercare instructions from your tattoo artist, or use like certain products. Like, if you get a fresh tattoo and immediately go submerge it in like a spa or like the ocean or a river or something that's full of bacteria and it gets infected, or, you know, your tattoo is going to look significantly different than had you just avoided those things and really followed your aftercare instructions, taken care of it, avoided direct sunlight, you know, things like that, you know, because it is technically a controlled abrasion. It is under the skin, and healing those first couple weeks, those first few days are just crucial to how that tattoo is going to heal. But once somebody leaves my studio, you know, I can only guide them so much.
You can't go home with them and take care of it. Yeah, right.
You can say, like, do this and avoid that and your tattoo is going to be fine. But then, you know, that you have to trust that they're going to do that. And most people don't, you know, they say that they will, but realistically, humans, like, you know, we're all kind of lazy to some fault.
For sure.
You know, yes. I haven't always taken care of my tattoos the best, you know, especially before I became a tattoo artist. You know, I was just like, oh, yeah, I'll put lotion on it. That's cool. You know, but it gets dried out and flaky because I didn't, you know, do what I was supposed to do. And, you know, it's up to the client, because at that point, you're the one that has to live with it.
Right.
So if you want it to look, you know, and beautiful and last over time, just do your best to take care of it. Otherwise, it's going to look pretty run down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because I have some tattoos, like my sleeves, I never go into the sun. It could be middle of summer and I still find a way to like cover my sleeves, because I spent like hundreds of dollars on my tattoos.
So
I'm probably in the thousands at this point. And I don't want them to be like really awful looking, you know, down the road. So I do my best to put sunblock on healed tattoos. I keep them covered. I try to avoid, you know, excessive, you know, damage, I guess. Like, you know, I just really try to protect my tattoos because it was such an investment, you know. So that's what I do. But some clients, they just, no matter what you do, they just can't, you know, they just can't take care of them.
Well, it all depends on, they probably don't generally take great care of themselves. So asking
sometimes
them to add in the extra time and effort, you know.
Yeah.
So how do people find you most often? Is it through Instagram? Is it through your website? Is it?
Typically through Instagram. You know, I do try and post a lot, but there are some times when I just, you know, kind of need a break, or if a client cancels, I don't have anything to show for that week, you know, but most of the time I can be found through Instagram. It can be tricky though, because sometimes I'll get emails through my website, an email through, you know, my tattoo email. And then sometimes I even just realize that somewhere out there in social media land, I had my personal email attached to something.
Oh.
And I was getting a couple of tattoo requests in my personal email, and I actually was like, how did you find me this way? Because that was a little bit unusual. And they were like, oh, well, it was attached to this. And it was like some hidden link on one of my pages that I hadn't switched over. I was like, that's crazy. You know, and then my Facebook page, messengers on like my personal page, it can all just be a little overwhelming. But most of the time, Instagram, you know, I feel like if you're a tattoo artist in this day and age, you really need that Instagram to get your work out there.
It's people just scrolling through and seeing artwork and so forth. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite piece that you've been commissioned to do?
Oh man, it's so hard to pick because especially recently I've kind of threw it out there that like I love doing animal portraits and I love doing these bright, vibrant color pieces. So recently I've gotten a handful of requests to do, like I did a snake, I just did a lion, I just did a cardinal, I even did a Darth Maul, which I thought, I was like, man, I never thought I would really like to tattoo that, but I loved it. I was like, this is great, and I'd love to do more of that stuff, but picking a favorite is just so hard, because I feel like I say this every time I do an appointment. And I just tell my client, I'm like, man, I think this might be my new favorite. You know, and they're like, oh, you're just saying that. I'm like, no, I don't know. It's so hard to pick. But anything like with color or even just detail is like, man, this is my favorite. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think hopefully it's like writing though too, and each new piece is your best piece. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and I think that comes with something that you also enjoy doing and are passionate about too. Mm-hmm. And your skills, if you love and are passionate about what you do, then it just continue to improve and improve over time as well.
Yeah.
Just naturally with all the time that you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
So how at this point, are you doing enough work that you're able to do this full time?
Well, I really wanted to go full time before I had to go back to work, to be truthful, because I work two jobs and I was just on maternity leave. So I was on maternity leave for 4.5 months. And I had this goal that I was going to be able to tattoo full time at the end of my maternity leave and maybe not have to go back to work, because daycare is ridiculously expensive.
Super expensive. A friend of mine just told me they spent $18,000 a year on daycare.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Because my son's school just recently closed because of this whole situation going on currently, daycare is going to be $1,836 a month.
Jesus Christ.
And I was like, I don't even take home that much money.
That's insane.
It doesn't make sense for me to go to work if all of that money just has to go to daycare.
Right.
So, but I had this goal. I was going to try and tattoo full time, but I think, you know, it just wasn't very practical of me to set that goal because I did have a newborn. Mm-hmm. And the challenges of a newborn, you know, any parent out there would know, like, your hands are tied.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be times when I wouldn't be able to start drawing anything until like 2 o'clock in the morning, because that was the only time I was able to get her to sleep, you know, because throughout the day, every half hour to an hour, like, they need you for something. And
right.
I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to beat myself up because I didn't reach this goal. I just need to kind of change my perspective a little bit and, like, maybe set a more realistic goal. So hopefully I'm thinking by the end of the year I would like to go full time. But with a newborn, it just wasn't as practical. But I do think that I am taking in enough work. Like, I'm pretty booked out until almost the end of April at this point, that I probably could go full time if I opened up that doorway. But right now with two kids and, you know, we've got animals, like, I don't want to just like dive off the deep end and try to go full time and not have any savings lined up to catch me in case I fall. But I think a part of that too is just like relying too much on that backup plan. Like, I almost kind of wish I could just take the leap, because then who knows, like, maybe I could do it full time and everything would be just fine. But there's that part of me that just has that fear, like, I don't want to let my family down.
It's really hard.
Yeah,
you know, when you
it
if it's just you, it's one thing. But when you have people who depend on you, it is difficult to,
exactly,
to make.
So I was
that
like
move.
Well, just gonna hang on to this paycheck, you know.
Yeah.
For hopefully till like maybe the end of the year, and then just see how that goes. Maybe do better at coming up with some kind of savings, and then maybe by the end of the year, or maybe starting January 2021, I'll be a full-time tattoo artist and living the dream.
So, you know, you touched on briefly, you know, kind of with the whole pandemic panic and all that kind of thing. How is that affecting? I mean, you mentioned already you keep a very sterile environment, so that's already one concern out of the way. But I mean, I would imagine at some point that that has to affect the business a little bit, with people being concerned about, you know, proximity to one another. Mm-hmm. And so, have you seen yet a sort of direct impact on your bookings or anything like that from people who are concerned over this coronavirus thing?
Not really. Nobody's really reached out, but I have on my website like some pre-appointment things to keep an eye on. Mm. You know, like, make sure that you're drinking plenty of water. Don't go drinking like alcoholic beverages excessively the night before or the day of, you know, because you'd be surprised. Some people come in like hungover and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, like, oh, I just had a drink a couple hours ago. I'm like, no, like that changes things, you know. But also on one of my guidelines I just put on there, like, if you have been sick or you're feeling sick, like, mm-hmm. don't come into your appointment, because those things can drastically affect you. Like, if you're even borderline kind of feel like sniffly and coming down with something, and you come in to get an appointment or you get your tattoo, mm-hmm. that is a physical like trauma that's happening, and it could completely escalate your sickness into a full-blown like flu or I don't know, something. Yeah. Not necessarily the flu, because you know, you don't really know what they had to begin with, but it could definitely make their symptoms way worse going through something more traumatic. Like, you're supposed to rest, you're supposed to drink plenty of fluids, stay home, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I just tell people, like, if you're not feeling well, don't come into your appointment. I will never, ever make you feel bad about canceling because you're sick. Like, my top priority is your safety and your well-being. That should be your priority too. So if you're sick, stay home. It's not worth coming to get a tattoo. You can come in a couple weeks or a few weeks when you're feeling better. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll make it work. We'll find some time. It's not a big deal. But with this specific like coronavirus thing going on, I haven't had anybody like reach out or, you know, tell me like they can't come because of that. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know what to expect. The next few weeks are just kind of up in the air. I don't have plans to like stop tattooing, because Levi and I's environment is very small and like secluded kind of. So it's not like we have, you know, huge volumes of people there at any given time. I think the max we've ever had there is like 4 or 5 people at once.
Okay.
So it's not a large area. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of, you know, try to keep it like a more private experience, you know, so that we're not throwing parties or there's no food trucks outside or anything trying to get people to come in. But the hardest thing with this whole situation is supplies.
Oh yeah.
You know, because I do try and keep a very sterile environment, and I've had a very hard time finding isopropyl alcohols. Oh. I've had a hard time finding enough paper towels. I actually went to Target just to try and get paper towels, and we were alarmed at how empty the shelves were. And that was like insane. 5 days ago, so I don't even
now there's like nothing. It's insane. It's I don't know. The whole panic buying thing is actually, I think, worse than just waiting for the supply to, you know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, because we're not running out of things. And that's the situation. I have a friend that actually works at a store. And I had posted a Facebook video of me trying to buy wipes for my daughter, because she's 4 months old. We still use wipes, you know, disposable ones. And I was like, wow, look at these shelves. Like, I can't even buy wipes for my daughter. Luckily, we found some, but what do we do when these run out, you know? And a friend of mine worked at the store that we had been shopping at, and she was like, you know, we're not out of things. We're not. Like, we have stuff in the back, or we can supply, like, online orders, too. But people are just panicking that the moment you put it out in the store, it's gone. Yeah. And they don't have enough hands on deck to like keep constantly supplying it.
Well, yeah, because, you know? I mean, people go into these places, and the fact that now everybody has to be there to like man the checkout lines and so forth, there's nobody to go in the back and get the restock and do any of that stuff. It's just that's what starts to break down, is the manpower that's not available to make sure that things run, because everybody's bombarding them at once. It's insane.
And it's like, I have such a mother's heart, where I'm like, even when we did find wipes, we were like, we can't buy all these. As mm-hmm. much as we want to panic and prepare ourselves, like, we know that there's got to be some other parent out there that needs these wipes for their children. So we actually put like several back and we were like, no, let's hope that these go into the right hands. That's all we can do. Mm-hmm. Put it out into the universe, hope that these go out into the right hands and just walk away. You know, and then when we were actually standing in line to check out, a lady in front of us had, you know, she had two children with her, I believe, and like her mother. And she was like, I don't know what to do. Like, we couldn't find any wipes. Like, you know, these are the only wipes we found. And we think they were for, like hands or something. It wasn't even specifically for babies. Mm-hmm. And we were like, here, like, take some of ours. We found an end cap that had some, and we grabbed a few extra, but here, take them. And she was like, no, like, I have a whole box at home. Thank you, though. Like, we appreciate it. We just are a little concerned. We don't know what to do in the next few weeks. And I was like, yeah, I can appreciate that because we're kind of having the same thing, but we're just kind of hoping that things level out and people stop panicking.
Right.
Because there's like, yes, the coronavirus is serious, you know, but nobody out there said like you have to buy up everything in the store.
Right.
You know, I did read an article, I believe it was sent out from like Maricopa.gov or something, and it talked about like stocking up on non-perishable, not even stocking up, that wasn't the right word. It was just like, here's a few things to have on hand. And it talked about like non-perishables, drinking water, and like one other thing.
Sure.
But it didn't say go into a mass panic,
right,
buy everything inside your Target, your Fry's, your Albertsons, and leave nothing for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we're kind of in a position like we don't want to be a part of the panic.
Right.
But you're almost like,
you also
don't want to
be the people that are getting screwed and not having anything. Yeah,
because now,
it's terrible.
When we leave here today, we're actually going to go check up on my uncle because he's one of those individuals that is not able to go to a store.
Mm.
He's, you know, a little, he's an older gentleman, so he doesn't use a lot of technology. He doesn't do Instacart or Uber Foods or Uber Eats or whatever. He can't just drive down to the grocery store and get what he needs. So we're kind of like, wow, we haven't heard from him for a few days. Like, let's go check up on him and see if he needs anything or see if we can even get him anything at this point, because we haven't stepped foot inside a store for a few days and I'm seeing the pictures online and it doesn't look good. I'm like, wow, maybe I can get him like breadcrumbs and like literal breadcrumbs, because I think that was the only thing on the shelf, because pretty much anything in a can is like gone.
The chip shelf was empty. I was in Trader Joe's earlier. The chips were gone.
Yeah.
And they were, as I was leaving, the supply truck had arrived. They were just going to take more boxes down. It's like, I don't know.
I think
people are ridiculous.
The more serious issue isn't even so much the virus, because, you know, chances are if you're a healthy individual, like, you're going to survive this virus.
Right.
Like, to my understanding and from what I've researched, and no, my research doesn't include memes on Facebook or, you know, a couple of pictures, whatever, here and there. I actually do the research and I read and I go to, you know, legitimate websites. And, you know, I think the more serious issue is people panicking and buying up so many supplies. It's not even so much the virus. Like, my sister said it best on one of the comments she left on a post that I had made. She said, I am not afraid of the coronavirus. I am afraid of how people are reacting to the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so true, because, like, there are babies out there that, like my baby, we almost didn't have any wipes, but luckily we found some. You know, there are babies out there, the formula is gone. These babies need formula, and who knows who's buying it in bulk, you know? I saw a post from a lady in Texas that was going viral. She had bought up, like, 50 cans of Similac, and those are like $25, I think, each, turning around and selling them for $70.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Like,
profiteering
that is
on
ridiculous.
Top of it. Yeah.
I was like, I was enraged. My skin was tingling. I was like, ugh, I need to shut off Facebook. Like,
yeah,
this is too
people
much.
Are the worst.
I'm
curious. So how is it working with Levi in a studio with another artist like that?
Oh, I love working with Levi. I've always loved his work and like appreciated just him as an individual, like since I met him when he was at Jade Monkey when it was off 19th Avenue Northern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walk in and they're real artists and they're real like chill. They're not, you know, they're not pushing out tattoos just because of, you know, just because of the money. Yeah, obviously we want to do this as a living and obtaining some kind of like financial gain is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're totally, like, he's totally about the art. and just making sure that good quality tattoos are out there. And he's such like a humble dude. Mm. I think, you know, most people come in when they get their tattoos, they bring like their cell phones or music and they just want to tune out. I don't think I've ever done that when I was getting tattooed by Levi. And I've been getting tattooed by him for years. And we've always just been able to have like these really cool conversations. And sometimes like I go into the tattoo thinking not even so much about how excited I am about the tattoo, but just about what are we going to talk about today? Like, is it going to be aliens? Are we going to talk about technology, comic books, videos? I don't know. What are we going to talk about? And it's always really cool. And he's got such a like objective like way to stay on any subject. Like, it's not so like in your face, you have to believe this. It's like, well, here's my idea on something, but then here's the other side of it too. Like, what do you think? You know, so you never feel like you're getting like, you're like walking into a trap or anything. It's always just like a very cool, you know, conversation where you can hold any opinion and it's going to be just be, you know, you're just talking. There's no, you know, right or wrong. There's no judging, nothing like that.
That's awesome.
So he's really cool.
He's great. I love his art. I'm seeing his daily sketches on Instagram and everything. And he's just, it was cool to talk to him, and I'll have to touch base with him again. Cause I did enjoy that conversation. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's finish up with, how best to find you, how to book with you. And you know, anything else maybe you want people to kind of know to how to get in touch with you on the way out here.
Yeah. So I guess Instagram would probably be the best way to go about it. It is tattoos_by_SJ. My photo is just black and white, pretty easy to find. I do a lot of animal realism and mostly I'm trying to push more towards like photorealism. So if that's something that you're interested in, like absolutely hit me up. I'm so excited to do. I've got a few projects coming up that I'm just like, I can't wait to get to them because it's like right up my alley, photorealism. I love doing animals. I'm trying to dabble more into like even portraits, but that's like a big risk. A lot of people like, you know, they want their portraits to look amazing, and it's, you know, it's hard like trying to get those booked. But Instagram, I have a Facebook page, Tattoos by SJ. My email is tattoosbysjw@gmail.com. I do have a website. I don't know. I want to say it's like a Wix website, so I'm not sure exactly what it is off the top of my head. Yeah, because if you go to my Instagram, there's a link on my bio to get to the website. And all over that, it's, you know, there's contact me buttons. There's like a booking button. So, you know, I try to keep it pretty user friendly. And otherwise, I think, you know, Facebook, Instagram, my website, those are probably the best ways to get in touch with me. Cool. And then see some of my most recent work, because I try to stay on top of that. So everything that's posted is very recent.
Nice. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for talking to me. This was a blast, and I'm a huge fan of your artwork. So
thank you.
It was really nice to sit and chat with you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, that's it. That's the show. Thanks as always for listening. Thanks again to SJ for stopping by and chatting with me. And Tattoos by SJ is how you'll find her. And that is gonna do it. Be safe. Be responsible. Wash your hands. Don't... I wonder if the rate of... No. I'm not even going to go dark. I'm not going to go dark. But I wonder how people are coping with spending so much time together. Because that is not something I'm experiencing currently. So I'm curious. We'll see if I get any responses to that. And whatnot. See you on down the road. This has been a Hoon Waddle production. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not check out one of our other fine podcasts available from hootandwaddle.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any number of podcast apps. If you'd like to support Hoot and Waddle and get access to an exclusive member-only podcast, receive discounts on merch, and more, go to patreon.com/hootandwaddle.